This episode is brought to you by FX's The Veil, starring Elizabeth Moss. FX's The Veil is an international spy thriller that follows two women as they play a deadly game of truth and lies on the road from Istanbul to Paris and London. One woman has a secret, and the other has a mission to reveal it before thousands of lives are lost. FX's The Veil premieres April 30th, only on Hulu.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hello, everybody. This is Marshall Poe. I'm the founder and editor of the New Books Network. I've published several academic books, and one of the things I found frustrating is my inability to get them picked up in the press. There really is no PR service specifically oriented toward academic books. Recently, however, I had the opportunity to work with a PR firm in New York, RLM, on a book that I recently published. And I have to say, they did a remarkable job at a very low price. And this got me thinking. I wonder if the New Books Network and RLM could provide a service that would promote academic books. So the folks at RLM and I put our heads together and we came up with a package. It is specifically targeted toward people like you, people who write academic books. So if you're interested, you should go to the NBN website and click publish your book, and there you'll find some information about the services that the NBN and RLM are offering. What we really want to do is provide you with value for money. As far as we know, no such service exists. This is the first of its kind, and we really hope it is successful, and we hope that it helps you get the word out about your academic book.
Welcome to the New Books Network.
Welcome to the New Books in Poetry, a channel of the New Books Network. My name is Yakir Englander, your host today. And today we have a new episode of a series of episodes that I'm doing with scholars and artists from Israel and Palestine. I do it since so many times when we hear about the Israeli-Palestinian conflict, we hear ideas of people who think about the conflict from outside. What is important for me is to bring the complex voices from the area, from Israel and from Palestine. And today we have the honor to speak with the poet Sigal Naor Perelman, who is a literary scholar, editor, founder, and co-director of the Derech Ruach organization that promotes the humanities in Israel. Sigal has published two research books on Natan Zach and Noach Stern, two Israeli poets. And her first volume of poetry that we will focus today, Makhluta, was published in 2020. Makhluta, which means in Arabic, mixture, is the first volume of poems by Sigal Naim Naor. The book involves poems about family life, love, and radical political poems. In a personal note, and before we will start the interview, I want to say that this book of poems is one of the most radical and honest, which use and bring the voices of people who grew up in Haifa. Haifa, a city that has together Israeli Jews and Israeli Palestinian Arabs who live together. And in her poems, Sigal doesn't let the readers and the listeners, I hope, to run away from the conflict, to run away from problems, but she give you the nuance of life, of what does it mean to be a human who lives inside a conflict. Sometimes, as you will see, we both struggle with the English, which is so important for me that the listeners, mostly people who are English speakers from birth, you will see the efforts of people who didn't grow up with English. What does it mean to translate the life? What does it mean to bring Arabic and Hebrew to the English? So I'm so pleased and so honored to interview Sigal. Sigal, welcome to the New Books Network.
Thank you for having me here.
Thank you. It's what I would love to do, Sigal, today is to speak about your poetry, and I think your poetry, something that touched me in the poems that we're going to read, are poems that touch on, I would say, on the holistic life of people who are living in Israel and Palestine, because it's a very personal one, but the political parts are coming and are building inside the personal. And there is something in this combination that I think that in our podcast, in our dialogue, and also with others that I did, I think it's come again and again. I would love if we can start with your poem, Kovacho in Hebrew, and Come and Go in English. If you can please read for us, and then we will, I would love if you can share a little bit about the poem.
Okay. Come and go. In the room, the women talk about everything that can enter the mouth. A cookie from the buffet, or a dress from the magazine, or Courbet, Origin of the Universe, in Musée d'Orsay. One of them has been there last summer with her ex-husband. What do you think, girls, about the shooting soldier? Could have been my son, yours, hers. Did anyone read the latest things from Grossman? Moroccan pillows on the sofa, like guests in the living room, guarding the door. Who is it coming? Let's read. Never understood poetry, but Poe is cool. We really like him since high school. This is the poem Come and Go. It's a gesture to, you know, to T.S. Eliot, his great poem, great poem to Sir Alfred Frockrock, or Frookrook. And he has two lines there in the poem when he says, in the room, the women come and go, talking of Michelangelo. You know, it's the bourgeois women that likes to talk about everything and to share everything, but they really don't have a specific understanding about the political situation. They grab from here and from there, and then they shape something that they think they might think that it is a political view, but actually it's not.
It's not, but also I wonder, Sigal, maybe they know politics very well, because at the end of the day, they are living the politics. I mean, what I love about this poem, that you can feel the life of, I don't know, some portion or some parts of Israeli women, that you see the mix of culture in the poem. And at the end of the day, even if they don't know what David Grossman wrote about the political situation, but their children are in the military. Something is happening there that I wonder about all these women who don't have point or standpoint, but the situation makes them that they are involved.
Yes, but you know, it's a production line, you know, their children join the army, the education system in Israel directs the children to the military, and they mothers, they think that it's the, you know, it's the some evil destiny that they might accept, that they must accept. So I don't really think that those women think about the actual meaning of sending their children to the army. They're doing it because it's something that you do. It's something that you must do. Everything, everyone send the children to the military, and they, you know, they up photos to the Facebook and to Instagram, and they hug the children with a big smile on their faces. And, you know, I don't really think that they understand the deep meaning of this action. You obey to the system.
Mm-hmm. And can you say something about, like, when you write your poetry, something that walk with me all over your book is the involvement of the personal and the political together. And for the listeners, there are a few chapters inside this incredible sensitive for me book. You have a chapter that speak about the boundaries or the borders of the bed, which we'll speak later about intimacy, about the diary of a principal in a high school that she speaks about her life, about Ronit Matalon, who was a famous poet, and I think like thinker and unbelievable, unique person, Ronit Matalon, who passed away a few years ago. And then you have these poems which speak about the holes of entering and the holes of leaving, right? Very personal ones. Can you share a little bit with us about where your poetry come from, or what made you to decide I'm going to, not to write the poems, but to decide to publish your poetry?
Okay, you know, in your head, you do not have sections of the personal things and the political thing and everything. Everything is a mixture of everything. And you don't need a passport to move from one thought to another thought. And everything attacks you together. And this is my motivation to write those poems. I have something that stressed me from outside, and I need to sit and I need to write something. I really don't know what is this something, what shape it will have, but I need to write, and everything it looks like some, I don't know, looks like I don't really have a sharp consciousness about the things I write. I know something, but the political situation is very personal to me, and then the personal thing are very you know, politic to me.
It's like, it's so interesting. So you said that the political and the personal are very involved with each other.
Yes.
Yes. And I wonder, who are the people that, do you think about your readers when you write your poetry?
No, because if I would, I won't write even one letter, because you know, I'm a very nice person indeed. I'm very generous and very kind and everything, but in my poetry, I'm very violent. I have a very heavy irony that I use in my poetry. I have knives and swords and everything, and I need to use those tools and not, you know, gentle tools. So I don't think about my reader, but yes, I want to communicate with them. I want to get into their hearts. Yes, I want them to be interested in my words, and I want to be very, very, very sharp and very clear. And sophisticated. Mm-hmm. Not to be sophisticated. I want to be very clear in my words. I want to make them understand my point of view, my thoughts. I want them to get new to my life, to my family, to my deepest thought and feelings and everything. But I'm not the person that you meet now in my poems.
Yes.
I'm not that person, that nice person. No, I'm something else.
And do you let yourself, do you feel all, I mean, for sure you feel all these feelings, but I wonder about it. So I want to share with you something, Sigal, and it's also connected to this beautiful poem. When I was involved in the Israeli-Palestinian conflict in Jerusalem, I was running a youth movement for Muslim, Christian, and Jewish youth, many of them coming from families who deeply didn't believe in peace. One of the things people ask me, why do you do peace? Or why do you try to do something to change? And I said, you know, I don't think about the people who deeply care about politics. I actually care about the majority who just want to live, about all these mothers who maybe don't think, I think Sigal, as you mentioned here in this poem, who do not think why they send their kids to the military and why it's normal that your kids when they are 18 to go to military. I think that I want to work for change for them so they can continue not to ask these questions, but will not need to send their kids to military. And I really love the your description of why you write, because do you want to give each one of us the permission to be the other Sigal in a way?
Yes, I do not talk about peace, I must say. I'm not romantic. I don't have a romantic thought or something, but I want people to live, you know, to be safe, to be peaceful, to can provide themselves. And so that's why I can't understand how the Israeli people lean to their ideological thought and point of views, and not about the personal, the people that stands in front of you, the child. They don't care about it, you know, the child, you know, about, I think it was something like, I think, more than 600 children that killed in May 2021. So what about those kids? What about those kids? But the people in Israel are they're so rough and they feel like victims all the time. And they can't see the people that stand in front of them, that they're an actual people with lives, with their desires, with a lot of things. And this is very personal for me. Mm-hmm. And this feeling of mercy to mercy people. To think about the mother that lives in the other side, in the other side of the fence. But no, the Arab people are always cruel to the children. They want their children to be a shaheed and everything. But here we are okay. We are very moral people and everything. And I can't stand it. I really can't stand it. And I think that yes, this is the point where my poetry tries to make sound different. I try to convince people to think otherwise, not to think like, you know, like cows that goes to
slaughter.
I don't know.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yes, yeah, thank you. You know that you have another poem that we will not read today, but you speak to, in one of the operation, there was a unit, its name is Givati, and just before they came into Gaza, the officer, he gave them a speech, right? His name is Ofer. And I you know, it's a very famous speech that he gave, and we will not read it, but I really love that you understand that at the end of the day, we have here a general who speak to 18 years old children, right? And the words and the connections that he did between the operation that they are going to go into Gaza to the biblical wars between Israel and the enemies, right?
And I think, with the Bible and the battle.
Yes, with the Bible and the battle. Thank you.
And the battle. These two, you know, entities that he connects together, and pursue those children to go with the holy, I don't know, holy feelings and a lot of pain, to go with a lot of pathos to this battle and to do something like the, you know, God. Ophel Winter is a God that tells those 18 years old children to go and fight for something very, you know, big than them, biggest than them.
Yes, yes. And you take him, and like in a way you try to, like, you say who he is, like, right? You really show, I think, you the readers, it's like, Ophel Winter, what do you do? And where do we live that this is what's happened to the military before they go into a super complicated, from mostly humanitarian point of view, right? To go into Gaza is like to go to a place where kids are going to be between bullets, like innocent people are going to be between bullets. And there is something by looking at it from a biblical perspective that give permission not to see all of that in a way, because we speak about the big enemy.
Makes a huge manipulation on those children.
Yes.
You need to see it. Okay, go to the battle, go and do whatever you need to do, because you know, you need to do it because you are in the army and everything. But don't think that this is something that will make you. What a difference between those soldiers and you know, the Shaheeds. What's the difference? They are the same. Why do you think you're better? Think about yourself as something that you know, be aware to yourself, be aware to your actions, to your thought.
And it leads us, Sigal, to a very personal poem that you wrote to your child, to Nitzan. And I think that in this poem, we're going to see how the political become so personal. Will you please, Sigal, read for us a poem?
Yes, this is a poem for Nitzan. She's my biggest daughter. She lives in Paris since she were 17 years old. She's now, I think she's 10 years almost there. She couldn't join the army. She couldn't think even to carry a weapon or to do something. So,
and do you think that's because, is it connected to the education that you gave her? Like this sensitivity that she couldn't even think to hold a weapon?
Maybe I try to say it in English, but in the Bible there's a chapter about Dvorah. She was a prophet.
Yes.
And she sang about the Plishtim and Sisra, he was there. She says that Yael, Eshet Chever HaKeini, in the Bible,
the one who killed the officer, like the most general of the enemy. Yes.
Was a friend, very good friend of Israel, of the Israeli people.
Yes.
And then Nitzan was, I think she was fourth grade or something, and the teacher asked the children in the class about this poem of Dvorah, and Nitzan said, "I'm not." She was not fascinating about this fascinated about this poetry, but she said that she think about the mother of Sisera that stands near the window waiting for a son to come home, and he will never come back home. So this is Nitzan, and I don't know if it's my education, or I don't really know, but she's very, very sensitive girl. And she's now when she lives in Paris, and she writes about Israel all the time. This is a PhD. She writes now a dissertation, and she writes about Israel, because Israel is, she is fascinated from Israel and their political situation and everything. But she's very sensitive. And she said, I remember that she told me that if a three-year-old boy was standing in front of her and asked her, why do you wear a uniform? And she said, and I wouldn't know what to say to this child, little child. So
wow, thank you. Yeah, let's read.
I smuggled you across the border that no hand of those who find joy in their labor might touch you. No hand of those dealing in blood, though no one misses you as I do. Your father, perhaps, or your brothers. I saved you when you told me, Mom, they're fixing us like buns in the oven so that we'll come out at the right time, ready to serve the sword, though constantly, every evening. I miss you and count your good days far away from here. Your good heart stands firm against the flood of brow raisers, but it is I, my daughter, who saved you. For since the day you were born, I whispered in your ear, don't fall for the enemy road, talk of destruction. We are strangers to any man. And then you refused to sing to be a free nation. You couldn't say free because you knew, not free like a bullet shot through a rifle scope to the head. For much is the grievousness and much the sacrifice and the heart untouched by suffering, as if 8 years is not manslaughter upon this earth. My daughter, both of us shall know that from the day you were born, I pushed you away so that you learn to live without me across the border with a friend, a lover, my forsaken heart, one bun saved for good from the all-consuming oven.
Sigas, when did you write this poem?
It was in the Memorial Day. I think it was 2012, maybe. And I was shocked about the people. Who the grievousness was so deep, and they talked about the bad destiny of the Israeli people, and what to tell them, no, you do not have to be like a buns in the oven. You can be something else. You can shape your own destiny. You can shape the Israeli destiny. You can do something else. You don't have to obey. And to obey the military, to obey the things the educational system in Israel directs you into those military thoughts. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, Nitzan, it was there, I think she moved to Paris then, and I missed her so much, but I was so proud at her, and I was so proud that's what she decided to do, to leave this country and to live across the border and to write about Israel, but from Paris, and to see things clear and not to be, you know, not to be fascinated from this, all this grievance and this victim state of mind.
Did you had a chance, like, did it happen that you were reading this poem, I don't know, in different, you know, events that you did or other things? What's the reaction to your poetry from the readers or from people that are listening to these poems?
When I read the poem for Nitzan, a lot of people cry. Mm-hmm. Cry because I think they touched by this poem, because it's very personal. Yes. And it's not criticize them, but it's a relationship between a mother and a daughter. And we have, you know, it's very intimate, this relationship. So they cry, and I think they understand something about them, about their point of view or their decisions or their, I want very much to get into their hearts. Mm. into those people hearts, and to convince them that something here is very wrong. I know that in the other morning, when, you know, they will send their children to the army, I know, but I hope that maybe something, a little thing, moved in their hearts. And maybe they will think otherwise in the future. I don't know.
Mm-hmm. Nitzan, she's your oldest, right?
Yes.
What do you think with the others will happen with military and their decisions?
Adal joined the army, and he was in the Navy. And now my youngest daughter is in the army. So, you know, we're not like one fabric. Yes. Our yes. You know, we have a lot of we are a lot of things in this family, but I think that my children are very sensitive. And I asked my youngest daughter, what would you do if you need to go and you know, and guard in the occupied territories? What are you going to do? And she starts, before she joined the army, and she started to cry, and she said, I don't know, I will see. I will see, I will see. But I know in my bottom of my heart that if she will need to go to the occupied territories, I think that she will refuse to do that, and maybe she'll go to jail. And I know it. I hope she won't do it, because I think that the young people need to say no. I refuse. That's it. We need to stop this situation, this evil situation.
It's I think it's so powerful for our listeners, like, to know that the mother who wrote the poem to Nitzan is also a mother for, like, two other children who are in the military. And I think something very powerful about your poems that you have a very strong opinions, And on the same time, you understand that life is even more complex than that, right? That in life, we are holding contradict values together. And maybe what, for me, one of the gifts that I got from your book is maybe the wish that each one of us will be more sensitive. Because sometimes we do hard things, but the question is like, how do you do them? What is your
attitude? I can't put an heavy end on my chip.
Yeah.
I can't put you know, and I cannot tell them what to do. But we are not liberal. We are very radical in this house. We are radical, but you know, yes, it's very, very complicated situation. And my children are more important to me than my opinions. Mm. So the personal is more important to me than my political opinions.
Eat stress-free this spring with Factor's delicious, ready-to-eat meals. Every fresh, never-frozen meal is chef-crafted, dietitian-approved, and ready to eat in just 2 minutes. Choose from a weekly menu of 35 options, including popular options like Calorie Smart, Keto, Protein Plus, or Vegan and Veggie. Get chef-prepared meals on the table in 2 minutes with Factor's ready-to-eat meals, so you can go back to doing what you love this spring. Looking for gourmet meals? Try meals that feature premium ingredients like filet mignon, shrimp, truffle butter, broccolini, and asparagus. And this is the part I really like. No fuss, no mess meals. Factor meals eliminate the hassle of prepping, cooking, or cleaning. You simply heat and savor the good stuff. Factor is the solution for fast, premium meals without the need for cooking. Head to factormeals.com/NBN50 and use code NBN50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next box. That's code NBN50 at factormeals.com/NBN50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next box while your subscription is active.
Which leads us, Sigal, to a poem that it's not translated to English, but I think it's something that I felt very much all over the book, is the multi-layers of the cultures that are involves in Sigal, right? The Arabic, the Hebrew, the Yiddish. So I would love if we can read Anna Makhluta, which is the first poem in the book. It's also Anna Makhluta, Anna, which is also Makhluta, is also the name of the whole books of poems. And Ken, before we're going to read it, can you share a little bit about, you grew up in Haifa, right? Which is a city that involves everything you can imagine in Israel and Palestine together. Yes. Can you share a little bit about that before you read the poem?
Yes, you know, the people who live on the mountain are considered more than the people who live downtown Haifa. Mm-hmm. In Haifa, you need to have money. If you're rich, you're something else, and if you're poor, something else. And I was born in Kiryat Eliezer. It's a neighborhood downtown Haifa.
Yeah.
And there were a lot of people who survived the Holocaust. And I can remember one man who ran naked on the streets, and and my mother said he came from the Holocaust. Hmm. He came from the Holocaust. They passed the Holocaust. So, Haifa, in Haifa there are a lot of Arabs and Jews, but usually they don't meet, they don't sit together. Sometimes yes, sometimes not. But I have now, you know, I promoted the humanities in Israel, and I have schools in Israel, in the universities, in Haifa University, Tel Aviv University, Bar Ilan, Ben Gurion, in the Negev, and two other colleges, Zoronim and Tel Chai. And we have now a class with almost 20 Arab students that studies together with the Jews. And it's great, but Haifa is very, very, you know, it's the people here are very bourgeois. And it's a very complicated city, although I must say that we meet the Jews here and the Arabs live here more comfortably than in Tel Aviv or in Jerusalem, or it's very natural, but we have a lot to do. But yes, Haifa is a very, you know, I like the city. I was born here and
now you live in the mountain, I guess.
In the mountain, yeah. Yes, in the mountain, on the mountain, on the top of the mountain. But I remember downtown Haifa all the time. It's in my body, it's in my soul, it's you know, it's how I live, it's how I think. It's
So let's read it.
Yes, it's a poem. I just say it's in Arabic and Yiddish, because those two languages I heard in my when I was a little child. My mom spoke Yiddish with my grandma, and my other grandma and grandpa talked with Arabic, but you know, not the oral Arabic, or they talk the Fusha. It's the literary Arabic.
This is a mixture of those two
languages.
Unbelievable. How did they speak between them? Like, how you did ever
Hebrew?
Okay.
Hebrew, but they have they have a sentence for every phrase for every situation in Arabic.
So let's hear some of this.
Ana makhluta ana. Ana makhluta ana. Ana makhluta. Tariban mabsuta. Tariban mabsuta. Ana makhluta mabsuta. Ijara bituli jar. Zeizenes gas kinder, dimame, dried zicharomit menel. Ana mush mabsuta. Lachali ani wafa. Bauli jara. ג'רדון חם אל פארה, ובאול אל ג'ר, כול חנפוס בעיני אימו רזל, אנה מן קריאת אליעזר, חיפה חמרה, מחלוטה, לא זמירו.
First of all, your Yiddish is great. I grew up in a Hasidic community in Bnei Brak.
Seriously.
I need to be very proud of your Yiddish.
Okay, thank you. But you know, my mom said that it's a street Yiddish. It's a very, very low Yiddish. Mm-hmm. That's what she said.
Which is so interesting, because when we think many times about the Ashkenazi and the Sephardic in Israel, we think about like the Ashkenazi as a high level, and then the Mizrahi is a lower level. And here you did the opposite. Like, your Yiddish is the Yiddish of the street, and the Arabic is like the high level, you know, literature Arabic.
I'm shocked by your observation, because you're so right. Because you know, my grandma was Russian, speaks. She spoke Yiddish. She was like a farm woman. You know, she came from Russia, and she was very heavy. And she used to cut the bread on her chest. And she was very like, and my grandpa and my grandma, that they were born in Syria, they were very noble people. And they were, you know, my grandpa was
Shadar Baradio. He spoke at the radio. He was
radio. And he was a radio man, and
Sigal, also when he came to Israel, he continued to use the radio, or he couldn't.
This is what he did in Israel, because when he came to Israel, he was 12. He was very smart, and he was a bright boy and everything. But
and he was in Kol Israel in Arabic. Oh, unbelievable. Yes. So he spoke Fusha all the time, like the literature.
Fusha all the time. Yes, Fusha all the time. Fusha, yes. This is the, you know. So every time when my head is hurting, I say, Rassin, Fasach Rassin. Or, you know, Kalamil Asama Bintasa Ilabita Al Shushim Chaba. A word that you say, you can forget, and something, I don't know, but I use those terms and those phrases all the time, because this is what I was heard when I was a little child. And also the Yiddish, my mom talked with my grandma on the phone, and I try to understand what my grandma is answering my mother.
It's wonderful. It's wonderful. Sigal, before we move to our last poem, I want, if you can, I don't know if there is an answer for that, but lately there is, at least in my experience, like a lot of poetry that is public, very good quality poetry in Israel that is coming out. Also, there is an incredible project of Van Leer University, together with Pardes, and I think some others, of translating poetry, and not poetry, but literature, from all over the Arab world, you know, to Hebrew.
I'm teaching we are co-teachers in Derech Ruach, Yad Baraguti, is a translator for Maktub. And yes. Me, and we are co-teaching an Arab class of the class I told you about.
Unbelievable.
And yes, and we use the two languages, Hebrew and Arabic, and we translate from Hebrew into Arabic and the opposite. And
it's about Akko, right? The city of Akko.
Yes, this is
Yad Baraguti. Beautiful.
Yes, beautiful book. Is a great person and a very generous person and everything. And it is great to teach with him together this class. It's great.
So can you share, because I feel that on the one hand, there is projects like the one that you just share and you teach together. And then maybe on the other hand, I see much more poetry that doesn't touch almost at all the Israeli-Palestinian conflict, as if we are living in another place that is very personal. It's beautiful, it's gentle, it's sensitive. I think it speaks about existential question around being a woman, being
motherhood,
being a mother, religious in a spiritual way, but as if there is no conflict anymore.
Yes, Yakir, we are now collecting likes in the Facebook. This is what we do now. And if we want to collect likes, so we can't talk, we can't write about the main issues that bothers us. We want to be nice, we want to please our readers. And you know, in Israel now, you can't even say, when you go out, when you meet people, you can't say the occupied territories, you can't say occupation at all. You can't say this word because people will look at you and what are you talking about? And people want very much the love of the audience. They write what they think the audience would like to read or to hear. that this is the, you know, this is the situation here. And you know, there are committees of prizes. And if you want to commit your book to get a prize, so what are you talking about? The committee may be right wing. So what are you going to do? It's a lot of money. And you need this money to continue writing. So you do whatever your audience sometimes like to hear. So they feel nice and comfortable. And you know, and this how you are betraying the art, the essence of art. This is not art to be nice. The essence of art is to be, you know, to be sharp, to be very precise on what you are doing with the tools of art. And Israel, you know, Israel is very right wing. You can see it. You can see it all over the place.
Thank you.
So
thank
the poetry you. Also.
Yeah.
The poetry also.
Yes. Thank you, Sigal. So let's go to the very personal. Let's go to the, you know, to borders of the bed. And the intimacy that is happening inside this specific poem is powerful. It's like, and I almost felt that this poem cannot be written outside of bed. Like you need to go back to the bed to be able to write such a powerful poem. Do you remember when you wrote it?
Yes, it was the crazy 40. I was 40 and, you know, you start to think about your life. I get married when I was 22.
Very young.
My children were big. And I started to think, what are you going to do with your life? Is this is how your life going to be? Do you want something else? And the hormones and everything. And this is the 40, you know, this is the 40. So it's a very, I think, very desirable poem about, it's very, I was, my feelings were very, very heavy. And I felt I want more and more and more and more and more. But when I looked myself in the mirror, I didn't like the woman, this woman. She was not a moral woman. She was not a nice woman. I didn't like her because when I was a child, I thought I would be a romantic woman. I would be a nice woman, good woman to my husband. And then, you know, I met the reality and it was not easy for me. But you know, I'm very honest about this. And if I want to read, I need to be honest because I want to be honest to all those women who read this poem. I don't want to lie to them to say, no, you need to be like this and you need to be like that. I want to say the truth. So this is my truth.
Let's read it, please.
The borders of the bed. I don't like the woman I've become, or maybe it was always her under the hard bones, the soft skin. Loves lie, a time almost as long as my life. In love's truth, I poured my heart towards you. Many songs filled my soul as if there was such a thing as love. And in the mirror, a hard, an evil heart, red, cruel, violent. What have I become? I asked you and draw a train with smoke coming out of his chimney. Remember the beautiful story my soul sister wrote? I'm not leaving you. White as a spider in two slashes and the face stretching out towards the quick moment. Into this I drained. After the seed of fire. This isn't me. What have I become? Man, talk, touches, kisses, fingers shoving in different tongues, chattering, drinking, firm hold at the elbow. I moved so far away, packing, crying, remnants of love. My skin itches, burns, lost touches, squeezed into the soft arches of imaginary family life. But sorry, this is ordinary and not my sealed childhood, out of which I can't escape, out of which we can't escape. You alone, me alone, each and this and his own mother. I won't ask when, I'll never ask when. If it's meant to be, let it be now. Although I ask, this too is ordinary. And you say nothing, a kept blink of an eye of saying nothing. God save love and nothing, anything about love. The body pours like water to a vessel. It is the sole position, well-timed complications of sleep and hurting my cheek on your soft chest. Blessed be the old habit. Only then the body falls into the soul, spills, spatters all around. But remember that well, my dear, the borders are the bed.
it's unbelievable, Sigal. It's like all what we feel, you know, these moments when we, I don't know, maybe for you it's simpler, but I think about these moments in life when we feel something and we are even afraid to admit that we feel them. Yeah. This is for me your poem.
This is my free zone, you know. This is really my free zone. Here, when I write, I know that if I want to lie, to say lies, so please, please go outside, meet friends, say lies, whatever you like, whatever you want. But if you want to write, you need to be honest, but you know, to be very, very, very honest. And my husband knows, he knows that this is me and this is the other me. And he needs to admit or to admit that this is the woman he was married to. And sometimes I see him move not very comfortably in his chair when he reads, but this is it. And I need to say the truth when I write. It's a very important thing to me.
Thank you so much. You know, I'm thinking about another poet, Avishai Khoury, who just published a beautiful, also incredible book. And he speaks about when he gets money from his father, who give him a gift of money, a big amount of money to publish the book. And he says, like, how much he would know and what will happen to my Abba, to my father, when he's going to read the critique that's in the book about him. And I think, yeah.
You need to kill your parents. You need to kill your children. You need to kill your husband. You need to kill your you know, your wife. You need to do this thing because this is literature. Literature is not very nice. We talked about this, you know, this state of mind. You can be nice, and you need to put your parents on the table, and to, you know, and to do everything because the literature is more important now, from life, now when you write. Of course, I don't want my mother to be hurt. I don't want, you know, I want her to be safe and everything. But, and sometimes, of course, when my mom reads a poem of mine, she said, oh, am I so stupid? Oh, am I so, you know, And I say, no, it's not you, it's not you. But in my heart, I know that this is the job. This is the job. You can be a nice person when you write.
And maybe in order to love, we need to give all these multi-layers to be there so we can really, maybe this is a way how to love a person, is to understand that we have these contradict layers that that love and also hate each other and disgust by each other, right? And as we have it, in a way we bring this package. And I think a lot about prayers. And, you know, there is a prayer that we say in Yom Kippur, when you come to God and you says, this is what I have, kli basar, you know, this is his flesh and blood. And maybe this is also what we want to say to our beloved one. Yes. This is who we are. We are humans.
Hamlet loves his mother, you know, but he say you are like a massive flesh. And, you know, something like a man, he said, you are massive flesh. I don't know how to say it in Shakespearean English, but yes, we can't love something that is, you know, that is made from one layer. As you said, we have lots of layers and lots of, you know, this is people, you know, in Facebook, you are nice and everything, but in life, we are not. So that's how we are, you know.
Yeah.
People, flesh and blood.
I cannot wait, Sigal, to read your next poems, that probably some of them will critique Facebook for sure. we can write a poem. You can write a poem about likes in Facebook.
Maybe I'll do it.
Sigal, thank you so much for being with us in the New Books Network. It was a real gift for us.